Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Bingetown TV and our coverage of Netflix's live action adaptation of of Yu Yu Hakusho. It's the juju, the Yu Yu, the juju. It's what's getting me.
Imagine a live action JJK.
Again, every time they announce a new live action, I'm like, how is that going to work? And then
Yu Yu Kaisen
right away. So it would be interesting for sure. This is episode 2. I checked. There is no episode names. So it's just episode 2. I didn't forget this time again. And yeah, we're just kind of moving on. We're getting introduced now, fully introduced, to these three mysterious characters that we ended episode 1 with. And I think this episode breaks cleanly kind of into kind of act 1 is Gouki, act 2 is Kurama, and then short little act 3 at the end is Hiei. So I think that's how we'll base the discussion, try to take them in those huge buckets, try to cover everything we can within them, and then we'll get out of here. So I guess if anyone wants to give any opening thoughts, or if we just want to dive in.
My only opening thought would be, I thought episode 2 was incredible. Like I think I'm right now at the point where I'm sold onto this live action, and I think this is a phenomenal live action. Like I honestly might, through 2 episodes, might even enjoy this more than the One Piece one, to be honest. Like I was really into episode 2. So that's my only thoughts, really.
Definitely. It raised the bar again. I was pleasantly surprised for some of the plot turns. And like Dave said, I mean, I don't know if I'll go as far to say I'll enjoy this more than One Piece, but it is really nice just experiencing the story firsthand with no background knowledge. It's making me enjoy the show without looking at it through the lens of like, are they adapting it well enough?
Yeah.
You know, and it's really nice. I'm not saying that you should go about anything live action. I'm not saying you should go about watching live actions that way. Like, I definitely think you should watch One. Right. But I think you should watch One. Like, for example, I think you should watch One Piece
with an open
and read the manga if you can or whatever. But still, it's just refreshing.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely, again, we'll talk about it. The fight choreography is just so engaging. It's like, it's unbelievable. So I'm laughing because I'm looking at the first note I have is, the first 2 words in the note says pulsating balls. So that's how we kick off act 1, which is Gouki. Gouki has this pulsating black ball, which they name the rapacious orb. So this kind of setting the scene for this is essentially the orb can take the souls of people and store them in there. Gouki's little, I guess, let's say quirk is that he likes children's souls. I guess they taste better. So it's kind of a race against the clock at this point. Gouki's going around snatching the souls of children and making them pass out. And Yusuke's kind of role is to go find him and get the orb back. They get in a nice fight. So I would just say we can talk about anything up until kind of maybe the conclusion of their fight.
I was just pleasantly surprised by Gouki being able to have a human form. They didn't talk, I guess, too much about it, but at the beginning of the episode, I was definitely kind of thrown off. I was like, who is this human that's holding the orb right now? Because last we saw it was obviously at the end was the big demon looking, the actual demon looking guy picks up the orb. So it was interesting seeing at the beginning of the episode that it was a human. I really thought it was going to be the Mr. Mullet guy, but obviously he had a little bit of a bigger belly, so it was not going to be him. But yeah, Gouki seemed to be, at least for me as of right now, of the three, he's like the embodiment of pure evil amongst the three. is how I kind of felt with Goki's introduction.
Definitely. Goki's chaotic. The red hair guy is, we'll get into that. And then the Hiei guy is mysterious.
Yeah, I think he'll be, like you kind of hinted at in the last episode, I feel like he's just going to be the middle of these two characters. Like, he'll be evil at first and then maybe join up with our main squad eventually. That's kind of how my mind is. That's why I'm kind of already associating Goki as the most evil. And they even do say Botan, is that her name? Mm-hmm. She says, like, she says the strongest, or at least the most feared amongst humans, whatever the description was. And I could definitely see it with this character.
Biggest threat, maybe biggest threat.
Yeah, I forget what the exact words were.
She says he's the most dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's because of the fact that he feeds on children's souls. So they're thinking of the danger in that, because I guess children are obviously less capable of defending themselves against this large beast. And so we kind of get the tip off from the young boy that Yusuke saved in episode one. He is able to thank him in person. It seems funny to think about, more people are now accepting of the fact that he's literally been resurrected and just kind of taking it at face value, but
nobody even asked.
The only case I'll say for the kid is he just thought that Yusuke was asleep. That's the only thing. Yeah. The mom obviously didn't make a big deal of it, even though she's probably just could happy. Have.
Yeah. Yeah. So she informs him, I guess technically the two of them inform that near their apartment building, kids have also been passing out. So Yusuke heads over there, runs into Goki. They conveniently come upon pretty much a scrapyard, and they just get after it. I mean, it's just throwing punches, going through cars, breaking windows, throwing car doors. I mean, again, like I said, the use of the environment in the stunt choreography is just incredible. This was so captivating.
I literally couldn't stop thinking about that comment you made in episode one of like the Jackie Chan resemblance to use fighting with the environment. That just resonated so much as I was watching this fight. And then it was great. I mean, the choreography back-to-back episodes has been A1. Absolutely zero complaints from this fight. Honestly, I was on the edge of my seat the whole time because I didn't know what was going to happen. I kind of hinted in the first episode that I think that at some point Yusuke is going to die, and this is going to create a weird conundrum later on in the anime. And I'm thinking here, like, he breaks his back almost. Is he going to die right here? And so I feel like that anticipation is always in the back of my mind. And again, the use of the environment has just been incredible. I love that Goki's like signature move is like to sit on the person. It seemed like he kept using his ass.
Funny.
Yeah, he kept jumping around on his ass and shit. So it was funny.
It was a good fight. The use of the environment was very entertaining. We got a little bit before the fight. What's his name? Yusuke? Sorry, Yusuke. I just drew a huge blank.
Yeah,
Yusuke, a little training montage with Koenma and Botaro, right? So that was cool.
Botan.
Jesus Christ.
Botaro.
I don't even know. That's
Jotaro. That's Jotaro.
One way to pronounce Boruto.
I think Botaro. Jojo. I think it's Jojo. Is Jotaro is a character from there?
Well, I just it was a good fight, and it happened like in the beginning of the episode, so you knew that there was a lot more to unfold afterwards as well. I thought that was nice and exciting. I have a little question: did he kill him? Like, he did the finishing move. But then like they didn't really show the demon kind of like dissolve or the body. So like, will he come back? I think no, but you know, I'm just curious what you guys thought.
Now that you're mentioning, honestly, I didn't think anything of it, but now that you're mentioning, you're absolutely right. There was no dissolving of Goki after he was dead. I'm going to say it's only 5 episodes, and I really don't think the manga is that long. Again, I have no idea about Yu Yu Hakusho, the manga itself. I'm going to say no as well.
Right. Yeah.
Just because I'm just thinking of pacing purposes. I don't think so, but I guess a confirmation would have been nice, but maybe they did not confirm it for this purpose.
Yeah, maybe. I liked how he pulled the soul out of the guy's mouth, right? Or out of his hands or something. The orb was cool. Its vibrations reminded me, it was pretty much identical to what was carrying the boat across the water in the spirit world. So I wonder if they're going to like,
that's
kind of like in Maji with the little golden butterfly things, whatever those things are called. Like, is that an elemental manifestation of like the spirit, yeah. You know? So that's just me being full on geek mode. I don't know if anybody else watches TV like that, but anyway.
That was a great catch. Honestly, I like the comparison.
And it's good that you caught out to the training montage, because we talked about it. We tiptoed around it at the end of last episode, but Yusuke's signature move, the spirit gun on full display. Maybe not full display, but at the end of this fight, obviously it's on full display. And I guess to go back to a little bit of the training montage, Botan also explains a little bit more about the demon world, the human world. So she kind of explains that yokai can hide their spiritual energy, which is a concept that we're familiar with, obviously, from just almost everything. I feel like you read or watch anime, manga, fantasy, all that kind of stuff. The barrier itself is supposed to keep out stronger yokai, but Botan doesn't know why weaker ones get in. I think in terms of like common sense, it makes sense to try to focus on the strong ones, and like if the weaker ones get through, they're probably easier to deal with. But that seems like they're kind of potentially planting a seed there for the future.
And Botan did just a little more world building. Botan to me did seem like she had an inkling of an idea of why it was happening. And my first thought was, like you said, Kyle, she specifically said the barriers meant to keep out the stronger ones. And so if these are considered weak ones, it would make sense that they're following through. But again, I think she was very hesitant in her reaction. And so I think there's something being hidden by her and Koenma from Yusuke for right now. Not that they're necessarily bad, but they're just maybe not giving him the full details because they don't want to scare him.
Right.
Along those lines.
I think it's the mullet man, but whatever.
It could, yeah, I mean, it could be. We haven't seen him. We didn't get him this episode. Last thing about the fight was, I love the part where Goki throws the car door. It Yusuke dodges it, and then he hits him with a fucking drop kick over the car. I love that part. Yeah. That was great.
I love when they're like grappling on the ground, when they're like switching positions and he has his arm and he like gets top guard too, and then like slides around it. It was just like, this is fucking awesome.
I was literally thinking about the actor and just like how much training he probably had to do. That was definitely some jujitsu right there, a little bit, the arm
cool.
grab.
It looks so cool.
Yeah, it was actually the arm bar. Right?
Yeah, the arm bar. Yes.
My favorite part of the fight was when Goki threw the door and it stuck into the SUV and Yusuke used it to propel himself up and like jump. Yeah. I thought that was, it's just the environmental, cool. The use of the environment is freaking sick. You know what I mean? Yeah. And not every single, I like how this manga, like, he's human. Okay, he can use spirit energy or whatever, but he's human and he's strong and he's got to use what he has at his disposal. And a lot of that is the environment. Like, he's nimble and he's crafty. It's nice to see. It's nice to watch.
It's nice that he just has like a base level competence in a fight. Too. We don't need to go through like a training montage of him learning how to throw a punch. Like, we've met him and he's already like knows how to scrap, which is fun.
Yeah.
And of course, it's the kid who I honestly did not expect to have like such a big role in this. I wonder what his role going forward is going to be. I imagine if this was like a 400 chapter manga, the kid would grow up and have a role in this, but
it's just not to be Monkey D. Luffy.
Yeah. It's just interesting seeing that he's coming back a little bit more. I just didn't expect it. And he does.
It's a nice way to pull your heartstrings, make the connection.
Yeah.
I imagined that he is kind of like you said last episode, Kyle, the kid is fulfilling multiple roles in the manga, and this is just one of them, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, there's definitely some changes again, obviously, and I've been reading more into the changes, and it feels like it's going to get to a point where it's just so different and condensed that it just kind of, obviously there's restrictions on what they can do. I feel like so far it's been quite the success.
I've been loving it. Absolutely. Yeah,
so we're gonna skip, technically there's a couple scene, like you get the Tear of Ice for the first time, we get Hiei. We'll talk about all that stuff, part of our act three bucket, which is just Hiei. So moving into our act two bucket, which is Kurama. So, and we get Kuwabara gets involved in this act, which was fun to see because he's back now playing that bigger role that we were kind of hoping for here. And this was quite, I would say, a change from act one. Goki, obviously, were immediately knocked down, drag out, brawl. And Kurama, I feel like we're kind of in like a stealth mission. We're learning more information. We're having heart to heart. So I'm just curious if I don't think you guys could have seen this coming, but kind of what your reaction was to all of this.
Kurama was watching the Goki fight too. Let's not forget.
Right.
And what's interesting thinking on that is when you're first watching, you know, you're kind of, I was under the assumption that he was just scouting out Yusuke for, you know, the potential showdown that he was going to do. And at the very end, when Yusuke is holding Masamura in his arms, it's Kurama is still, I'm like, don't say the Ninetale Fox name, but it is the Ninetale Fox yeah, name. Yeah. So, but he is watching in terms of, okay, Yusuke is actually a good guy. And this is, I think, seeing that moment for Yusuke allows Kurama to trust him, which is going into what they talk about later with the situation. So it's just cool how when you're watching, you're like, okay, he's just kind of scouting out the enemy. And Yusuke obviously is probably assuming the same thing. He's following him for a reason. Just a great twist that I wasn't expecting. I mean, like you said, after the introduction of Gouki, I'm just kind of expecting all three of these guys to just be monsters and
evil.
And that wasn't the case at all. And this was, it was just a great flip from getting such high quality action to now just like high quality emotional scenes from these yokai.
I didn't expect it whatsoever because their introduction to me implied that they were like a trio, like a team working together to steal these objects. By him being present at Gouki and Yusuke's fight and refusing to intervene, you know, definitely raise some questions. And then I guess his story,
a little bit Phantom Troopers.
Yeah.
He's a little bit there watching.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah. But, you know, it became clear why he didn't intervene when you get the details of his mom and how he was basically raised as a human. That was interesting. Like, he infiltrated a fetus. Like, whoa.
My next question is going to be like, who is the guy that caused Kurama to, you know, retreat? Because if Kurama is anything as strong as Gouki, who, I mean, you know, was obviously like a level one boss maybe, but was still strong, you know, if he was capable of that, who was the one that was beating that ass so hard that he had to retreat back into a fetus, awesome. You know?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. We do learn to hear that the Mirror of Darkness is the name of the artifact of darkness that he has. Essentially, it just grants whatever wish you desire. It reveals its power under a full moon. So this is kind of the first piece of information we hear. And Korobara also is kind of like there. He's here throughout this act, like kind of in the bushes creeping. We now know that he can see Botan. It's kind of like, okay, his friends couldn't, so does he now have this spiritual type of connection? So obviously they're planning this bigger role for him a little bit here. And then we do learn later on that the real catch of the Mirror of Darkness, this is after Kurama reveals the whole plan of, I'm going to, you know, use it to save my mother because, you know, I now feel this level of like compassion for her that I wasn't expecting to. And he's as shocked as Yusuke is that these yokai can feel compassion like this. And excuse me, we learn that the Mirror of Darkness, the real catch is that it is at the cost of the user's life. So that's obviously what kind of leads us into the final part of this act. And that Yusuke, being the good guy that he is, doesn't want that to happen to Kurama.
And of course, Kurobara has other plans because his friend was really fucked up by the yokai in first episode with the scars on his back. And yeah, I just love that Kurobara is actually, you know, getting a bigger role. Like we've just been talking about, the fact that he can see Botan is definitely a huge hint at something that I foresee him maybe eventually being able to wield spirit energy.
Yeah, I call that shit. I'm so proud of myself.
he's a great character, man. And I get the hatred. And it's just cool the parallels between Kurama and Yusuke in this scene where everyone sees Yusuke as a bad person, but you know, Keiko obviously views him as a good person. She makes these assumptions based on her own knowledge of someone, not what everyone else has to say. And it just gets completely implemented here in the situation. And Kurobara is immediately recognizes it by the end of it, you know, seeing that he's like, I'm sorry that I did this. And so that was just a great flip for Kurobara, because at the beginning I was a little bit worried. Koenma mentioned something, this might not go as planned, and that's when we get the first shot of Kurobara sneaking in the background. So I've kind of thought he was gonna fuck things up royally, but he learned a lesson, and we love the growth for our boy.
I thought that conversation between Keiko and Yusuke was really enlightening. Mm-hmm. It was a moment of growth for Yusuke.
Yeah,
I even wrote like he's opening up, although it's like a bit cryptically, where he's like posing this
what seems to be an innocuous philosophical question to her, but it's actually what he's thinking about in the moment, but he's not asking her in that way type of deal. So yeah, and I just like her character. I like her answer. I feel like she plays really good off of him. I also like this, like it's more obvious of a gag when it's in like an anime or in like a manga, but like how he, this is the second time where he's been about to eat, but he can't eat.
Yeah,
type of thing, which I just thought was funny because it like feels almost serious here because he's like, I'm hungry, but I feel like it would come across much more goofier in like a manga or an anime. So that honestly, it still made me laugh.
The only other question I guess I have here is, I'm surprised Botan didn't react to Kurabara noticing her. I feel like that was kind of obvious that he makes eye contact with her. And I feel like that would have been important for her to mention to Koenma, especially since it seems like not everyone is capable of viewing, of being able to see her. So just surprised that there wasn't a reaction, I guess, from Botan, but maybe she didn't pick it up right away.
He didn't say anything to her, so maybe she didn't realize.
Yeah, I was kind of looking out for it, but he does like look at her explicitly. So I'm just maybe it was, yeah, it could have just been something small
also
for her.
Maybe is so used to like people looking through her.
Yeah, it was probably, yeah, exactly.
That
so.
It's hard, unless he's like actually like calling her out.
Because you're right, I don't
assumes no one else can see her.
Yeah, because you're right. I don't think he, like, she does talk in front of him, but Kuraba doesn't necessarily respond to whatever she's saying. It's, yeah.
Yeah, he only talks just, to Yusuke. Yeah,
he's just yelling at Yusuke. And then he brings it up when she's gone, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, but the conclusion of this is going to be that Yusuke, classic MC action right here, dives into the mirror of darkness behind Kurama, offers up half of his own life for the sacrifice, for the wish to make Kurama's mother better. And yeah, I mean, it was just classic. I feel like we've seen main characters do this. I'm curious if you guys felt like it, does it feel unearned? Was it too fast? Or you're just feeling like this feels like par for the cure? Like they've done enough to introduce the concept of like, this is just who Yusuke is.
I feel the latter.
That's good.
They've done enough to, but I am surprised because I mean Dave's been ringing the death bells like since last episode, and I'm like, damn, like is this really going to end tragically for him? I mean, he's already halfway there.
Yeah,
you know, that's, have a life right now.
That's crazy, and it's very selfless for somebody he just met. I think that it will end up paying off for him somehow. This guy is going to repay the return the favor in some capacity, or maybe Koenma has the ability to kind of, I don't know, reverse it. Yeah, who knows? I mean, he's a like a all-seeing person, so entity, excuse me, not person.
Yeah, I felt like this was true to Yusuke's character. I can see why maybe manga readers are like, oh, this is episode two and he's already laying his life on the line for a yokai, like a little, I as someone who's watching, I mean, he laid his life on the line for a child who even
died,
who even the gods couldn't even see him saving. So it doesn't surprise me, I guess, that he would also, it was just like a really cool MC moment for me. I was never aware that he did this. I don't know how accurate this is to the manga, but the fact that he gave up half his life for a yokai who he deemed to be good was just insane. I think that was a true MC right there, and it was definitely a very hype moment for me. And Yusuke definitely shot up in brownie points for me.
I agree.
Yeah, it was funny. We talked last episode about how that episode covered like maybe 20 chapters. This episode was like 2 chapters.
Okay, that was my next comment. I was going to comment on like, I don't have an issue with him putting his life on the line that way because I'm used to manga and anime pacing. And if they're cramming however much into 5 episodes, like things need to go down. But that's actually very, that's something I didn't expect, Kyle, that it's only was 2 chapters.
Well, it's pretty much like Goki gets his chapter, let's say it's chapter 21, and then Kurama gets his chapter, which is 22, and then Hiei gets his chapter, which is 23. It's kind of how it works. So they did kind of just push a lot of things into these two, or I'm sorry, those 2 chapters into this episode versus the first one was kind of a speed run through things. But this 100% happens in the manga. I feel like it would be quite the change to
like have him lose half of his life. I can't imagine how pissed people would be if like that didn't happen in this source material.
That seems significant. Yeah. I mean, it saved Kurama. He was sure to die. They're both alive now. You know, how does that change things? Like, does that change?
Yeah. The, you're going to join the squad is what I'm thinking. Is
maybe.
Like,
I mean, does it change the dynamic of like the laws of the objects? Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I was also thinking of the relationship of the demon world and human world. Like, maybe we can get peace potentially. Who knows? But the last parallel there was obviously the fact that Yusuke can immediately relate to Kurama's situation because he was able to actually view his own death, and he knows the pain of a mother losing their child. And he, so that even more emphasizes just the fact that they're so similar. And it just, that made me feel like it was totally fine that he was willing to sacrifice himself to see another mother be able to, you know, keep their kid alive, or like in good health, you know, still grow up with their kid a little bit more. Even if it is only half their life.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of reasons, a lot of dots that would kind of push the two of these two together for sure. All right. So moving into Act 3, which is kind of the Hiei, Tarukane, Mullet Man act, let's say. So the first scenes we get here is essentially we're introduced to the concept of a tier of ice. We're not really supposed to know what that is at all at this point. We just see that Tarukane essentially traded the sinkhole to Mullet Man for this young girl, and she can produce tears of ice when she cries. He's kind of forceful with his goons. One of the goons is planning on getting her out, and then we have Hiei kind of slicing his forehead with his artifact of darkness, which is the dagger. And then that just leads us into kind of a chase scene, and Hiei kind of, we see Hiei's power a little bit. We get more of Mullet Man actually at the end here. So I would just say kind of, you know, obviously whole floor is open.
So first thing, Kurama is shown to be able to have the capacity of having compassion, right? As a demon, as a yokai. I think that maybe this chick is a yokai. And also I have another thing. I have a question. Did Hiei grant himself the power of having the third eye by slicing his forehead, or did he use the knife to open the eye?
I took it as he never had the eye, and that whatever the knife's ability is,
yeah,
it, because it was only a slice. Like, I think it's just like a part of the knife's power, you know, like if he were to plunge himself with it, I feel like that would obviously like kill him,
stab himself.
Yeah, whereas he only like nicked himself with it. I just think he knows the full potential of full potential of the dagger, and just, I guess, a slice. I took it as the slice in that moment opened that third eye.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it granted him that power, that ability.
That's what I took it as.
Yeah.
I think that this wasn't something that I explicitly read is different, but now that I'm thinking about it, it did kind of imply that, and that's not how it happens in the source material. But again, this could just be a way to speed it up, show it in a more concise way. So I think that now that you guys are saying that, it does seem like that's what they're trying to show.
Well, on the contrary, he wears the bandana, right? And he showed, it showed him taking it off, which is why I even posed the question, like, did he already have the eye?
He knew the dagger was going to do.
Right. Like, maybe he had the eye, the thing covers it, the bandana, and he needed that tool to like access it. I'm not sure it granted him whatever. I wonder if they'll dive into it. If not, it's not really a big deal. But he had a tear of ice, which I think is an important detail. Mm-hmm. So like, did he have it from that chick, or are they, or maybe, like, they, she has white hair, he has white hair. Does he have white hair? No, he doesn't. But
there's streaks, like, of white,
some highlights. Yeah,
maybe they're related. I don't know.
And maybe it's, he's anti the eye.
Yeah.
Maybe he was trying to take out the eye.
Yeah. True. That's also,
and that could just be the way that they were showing it. I just feel like that's the other perspective that's potentially possible here.
That is true.
I kind of agree with Alki on the girl potentially being a yokai, but I also feel like she kind of looks like Botan. So I don't know. if that's just, you know, presumptuous of me, but I was thinking maybe she is also in a position where she works with like Koenma.
Because she's like spirit.
Yeah, she has like the colorful hair, almost the colorful eyes. That kind of reminded me of Botan a little bit. So I'm not sure if it's a sister or if it's just the same being as Botan. But I also could see it being a yokai. Not too sure beyond that.
It could be a Shinigami.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
I also thought at first that when he was saying like, "Oh, we produce a tear of ice," that it was kind of like a rare phenomenon to happen. That it doesn't like, I guess I'm thinking of it, this is a weird comparison, as like a pearl with an oyster. Like sometimes you can have like shitty pearls in an oyster, and like some, maybe she like cries just regular quote unquote pearls, but then every once in a while there's a tear of ice that gets dropped. But I think now that I'm like, of course, you know me, I have the episode here, but I'm kind of like looking at it, and I guess it makes sense that it's more so like every time. But that's just how I took it the first time.
It seems like he was like upset at the goons because they couldn't get her to cry. Like they weren't willing to go cross a line to make her cry. Yeah. That he just kind of crossed with the cigar. So,
and there was one of the goons.
He's not happy with the goons.
One of the goons was willing to help as well. So
simp. Just kidding.
Yeah. Seemed like it.
He's got a little sister. Which is, I think that was funny to think about because he says, "I have a little sister about your age," and I feel like they're implying there that she's way older than he thinks she is.
Right. She's probably like 1,000.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm sure
that I thought the same exact thing.
Yeah.
Which I thought was.
But the whole thing of the tear of ice, like he had one. I just wonder if you have multiple tiers of ice, can you just, are they like having eyes everywhere, kind of, you know? That's. And maybe the spirit energy is what unlocks being able to use it. I'm not 100% sure, but it was obvious that there was a connection between both of the tiers of ices that were produced or shown in this episode.
Yeah. We're not exactly sure at this point what they can do.
Or if it like, and he did specifically look at it with his third eye too. So I wonder if there's like another component that gets added into it, because otherwise he would have just looked at it with his regular eyes, but.
Yeah, that's a good point too.
Yeah.
Yeah. What we do know, I think, also is that Mullet Man has a lot of them, or at the very least, he's not worried about getting them. Mm-hmm. Seems like he obviously knew what was going on with the sinkhole. He's aware of what he gave Tarakane. It seems like he, you know, is pretty much playing the game while also making the rules as well at the same time. So we'll get more of him. It's just, I think the last two things to talk about really are going to be one, just he gets a little bit of action. I thought it just looked really good. I think sometimes like super speed can look goofy on things. I thought it still looked good. Cutting the car in half was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one is going to be, we get this, an introduction to a new characters. So
yeah, that was a little freaky, a little intro there.
We have Mullet Man has what seems to be, you know, like a top bodyguard, a top assassin, something like that, but it's Togoro. So.
That was
again, we're getting the end of an episode introducing us to a character that that we're hoping to see more of, obviously, in the next episode.
His name's Togoro, is that what you said?
Togoro, yeah.
The design is just so weird. It has like a little person on his shoulder, and the glasses, I mean, obviously look like Doflamingo's.
Yeah, I thought the same thing.
They just look so goofy. They were so small or something on his head. I couldn't really tell. But
is Togoro both of them, or like
technically they're the Togoro brothers?
Okay.
I'm excited. Yeah. I'm excited for sure.
Yeah. So just another combatant enters the arena, and it's been, obviously they've given us two at the very least fights over these two episodes. So it seems like we're just ready for another one in episode three, at least one more. So
I suspect the Mullet Man may or may not have been the person that caused such like distress to Kurama or beat his ass so hard. I don't know. If we know that Kuwabara can see spirits, I think it's easy to infer that he's capable of manifesting spirit energy. With that being said, obviously Mullet Man has a lot of knowledge. It wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility to assume he has abilities as well, or he can garner the abilities. He's mysterious. He's seems like a pretty good antagonist.
Yeah
this has been a good, I think, change that they've made, because this is more like how TV works, how we have him as like this
kind of force in the background that they're giving us glimpse of, but he's kind of not directly interacting with a lot of our main characters yet. Because in the manga, like Togoro and like the Mullet Man don't really become like bigger players until like we'll say chapter 45 to 50 ish. While a lot of like the fights for the artifacts is like earlier, like chapter 24 ish. So they're just, you know, jumping this kind of creating this more coherent TV like narrative versus obviously when you're doing comics, it's easy to just like run issue,
right?
Introduce new character type of deal. So this has been, and like I said last episode, I don't remember everything that happens, so I'm not gonna nitpick, but I think this feels like it's a nice change for the TV arena.
What is Mullet Man's name?
Sakyo.
Sakyo. Yeah.
Oh, because he calls him
the fat guy. Calls him Sakyo, and I was like, oh, that must be Mullet Man, and it was.
Yeah. I'm gonna just keep calling him Mullet Man.
Yeah, way easier. Mullet Man. Yeah, I like Mullet Man. Okay, so. If that's going to be it, which it feels like it is, I think we've covered everything I wanted to say. It seems like you guys have good speculation. We've given, I feel like, good kudos, well-deserved kudos as well. Another good episode. I was reluctant to call it a banger when I first watched it because I was like, I don't know, I really like the first episode, but this is definitely really good. So I think we're feeling pretty confident after two episodes. Really excited to get into the third episode, but you have to wait a little bit for that one. But while you wait for that one, Bingetown TV is covering other TV shows like we always do. We wrapped up filming, recording for Beacon 23. Well, I guess technically we're filming right now. We wrapped up the recordings for Beacon 23 on Amazon Prime. Murder at the End of the World.
Mm-hmm.
The finale is, I think, being recorded simultaneously to this episode.
Yeah,
right,
which
now
I didn't realize. Yeah, we got the notification.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And yeah, Percy Jackson should be either on the horizon or maybe the first episode has dropped by the time this is finding its way into your ear holes. So just to say that Bingetown TV, we stay booked, we stay busy. We are going to be here for every episode of, I almost said, Jujutsu Kaisen again, Yu Yu Hakusho. But speaking of Jujutsu Kaisen, that season's wrapping up. We'll be covering that as well. So if you want to support us, the best way is just listening to us. It's liking videos that you're watching. It's subscribing on whatever you're listening on. And another thing I forgot to say the first episode is that if you found us on our separate Yu Yu Hakusho feed, just to say, route you to the main Bingetown TV feed has every episode. So you can just find everything there. And if you want it more organized, BingetownTV.com has a nice little panel, little page that has all of the shows that we've covered in, I believe, alphabetical order, which is super easy to sort through, although it is in the triple digits at this point. So you might take a little bit to sort through and see which ones you like. Once again, we are Bingetown TV, and thank you for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.